Listen and stream the all-new talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.
It is just about 10 o'clock in Trinidad and Tobago. This is Freedom 106.5 FM. And at this point in time, we've got a very special interview with representatives from the Ministry of Planning. We'll be speaking about development planning in Trinidad and Tobago. Our guest this morning, Ms. Aisha Donaldson, Senior Land Use Planner in Policy Development, that unit at Town and Country Planning Division. And she is an urban planner with over 16 years experience professionally. She considers herself a visionary. She's quite passionate, articulate, and committed to community and organizational transformation. In 2003, she pursued her Master's of Science degree in Planning and Development at the Faculty of Engineering at UWE St. Augustine Campus, with specialization in human settlements. In recent times, she was instrumental in work with the National Planning Task Force, which saw the passage of new planning legislation for Trinidad and Tobago. She is currently Senior Land Use Planner in the Policy Development Unit at Town and Country Planning Division under the Ministry of Planning and Development. In her portfolio, she supervises and assists with the preparation of land use policies and spatial planning guidelines for Trinidad and Tobago. So, good morning, Ms. Donaldson. How are you today? And it's a pleasure to have you in the studios of 106.5.
Good morning, Mr. Uttar. It is indeed my pleasure to be here, so I thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. So, we're going to be speaking about some specific details with respect to development planning. What exactly is development planning and the role of the Policy Development Unit for Town and Country?
Well, specifically, if I'm to get right into development planning, the function refers to the requirement of the division to prepare comprehensive policy frameworks inclusive of the drafting of national, regional, and community plans, land use standards, and spatial planning guidelines. As you would have heard, and the nation who listened in before when we had previous speakers, they would have spoken about another aspect of development, which is to do with development control. But today I will focus on the planning, development planning side of it.
Right. Okay, so development planning, you said that it would focus on a number of areas.
Yes.
Community, and what were the three areas that you mentioned?
It would be national, regional, and community plans,
right,
land use standards, and spatial planning guidelines.
Okay. In terms of national planning and so on, as of late, we've been seeing a lot of flooding and so on happening. Some people have been speculating whether or not persons that are doing construction may be a cause to that, whether or not it is according to best practice or just clearing all the trees and doing the private building or maybe large-scale like rental properties and that sort of thing. Does your agency take into consideration all of those avenues as well too for your development planning objectives and guidelines, as the case may be?
Well, indeed, flooding is the hot topic for the nation, right?
Yeah.
But flooding and flood mitigation is not just my agency. It is a number of governmental agencies. So we will have like Ministry of Works, etc., etc. But with respect to us, Town and Country, we have to do policies that would specifically say where you can and cannot build.
Sure.
And we have those existing policies. And therefore, if persons build in areas, there may be examples where they were not supposed to build there.
Right.
But we also have to, we can't just solely blame them. We have to consider the entire climate change
situation,
and sea level situation and sea level rise and those things. So I think the nation is very much unprepared for the space at which climate change is happening. And Town and Country is doing its part by working with other agencies such as Water Resources Management, the EMA, etc., and Drainage Division, etc., to come up with policies that will help this, because
right,
doing something is better than doing nothing at this
and
point.
I would say it's probably a balancing act, because you have to balance the needs and the wants for housing. You have a growing population.
That's right.
And I've seen a sort of a shift from a couple years gone by where many families would have been extended families. Everybody now wants their own nuclear home.
Correct.
Kids, as soon as they start to work, want to take out their mortgage or get a property or something like that. So you have the need for additional housing as well,
right,
to balance with those other avenues in terms of the impact that it may have, if any, in terms of flooding and so on. But you spoke about spatial planning as well too.
Yes.
What exactly is spatial planning for the novice that has no idea about spatial planning?
Okay, so the textbook answer would be that these are really principles that inform, like, developers. It even informs us, the planners, in making decisions,
right,
and the general public for procedures and requirements for pursuing various types of development activities. But if we were to think about this, let's say, out of textbook, literally, you have land space. So if you have land space, then they will have a spatial dimension towards it. And if you want to build something, obviously you have to consider where you're going to build. So that's where the spatial aspect of it.
Right.
And us as a division, we are trying to guide people as to how they go about deciding where you live, deciding where we put schools, where we put hospitals, etc.
Okay, so before I get into the schools and the hospitals, because I think that's an important one as well too, you mentioned if an individual may have property, land or so, and wants to do some sort of building. So just because I may have a lot of land doesn't mean that my house should be occupying an entire lot of land,
yes,
right?
That's
it's
right.
Not practical in the scheme of things. Is there any particular guideline or framework or direction that would guide in terms of the percentage or ratio that,
yes,
may be applicable for that private sort of construction?
So all that is development itself. So if you have to build a house, you have to have standards and you have to have permission to build, and therefore you come to Town and Country and we encourage the public to come to us for guidance on what is the ratio of site coverage. They call that site,
right,
coverage, building coverage, right, floor area ratio, etc., etc., as to what you need to do to build your house. So you can't just say I'm going to cover up the entire site,
right,
and I need my space. It's not
because a lot of people have seen do extensions or sheds,
yeah,
all sorts of stuff, and although the property may be within the confines, reasonably within the overall size of the property, but then with the garages or sheds or extensions or whatever goes all the way up to the boundary lines.
That's right.
And then the roofing system or guttering and so on extends beyond that, which,
yeah,
can cause problems for
the
neighbors.
That's
and
right. So that's
the overall
why,
community.
Exactly. So that is why we encourage persons to come to us and stick within the standards, because this is where the public health aspect of it comes in. You're going to affect your neighbors. And
right,
therefore, if every neighbor decide, I'm only studying me, right, then what would we have? We'd have,
right,
a public health crisis.
Right. So it avoids all of those problems in the long run.
That's right.
Okay, great. So in terms of the guidelines for these spatial planning, can you give us some idea of it, or maybe some examples of what these guidelines generally entail?
Okay, so off the top of my head, I could talk about, let's say, townhouses.
Okay.
We have spatial planning guidelines for townhouses that was approved. And so, for instance, if you have an HDC townhouse, of course, you have to go to HDC for approval for any kind of alterations.
Right.
But what the spatial planning guideline would guide you is that we recommend that you only build to the back of the property, right? So
okay,
that's just one example. Because you want to maintain, and this would be in partnership with HDC, we want to maintain the facade of the townhouses.
Right.
So we encourage the alterations to the back
to the
of
back.
The property.
Okay. So as you mentioned, a townhouse, let's say I am a developer or someone that wants to get into that, and I have a certain amount of land and I want to build a multi-story complex or so. Would that be considered as a townhouse as well?
Yes, so we would have the limitations depending on where the location is on,
right,
the number of floors.
Right, because
so
I know certain areas would determine
yes,
the amount of floors that you could,
correct,
facilitate.
So, and the heights of the building, et cetera, et cetera. So
right,
we do encourage developers to also come to us. And there is the information available on our websites.
Oh,
so
great.
You could go and read up on all the spatial planning guidelines. We have our documents there available for the public,
right,
in
so
an effort to help.
So you mentioned the website. Can you share the website with our listeners?
It is www.tcpd.gov.tt.
tcpd.gov.tt, right?
Yeah.
You also spoke about some other avenues that could work. Before we continue along with some of the guidelines for others that I would ask about, in terms of the planning process for schools and hospitals, is it that we are getting towards a sort of maybe a Western or Americanized system where you have like school zones or school districts that could maybe facilitate a certain catchment, that you zone, you know, as a particular grouping or so on?
Well, currently, even the Ministry of Education have the different counties. So you'll have like,
right,
County Victoria, St. George, etc., etc. We work with them to depending on need, because, you know, sure. like especially with HDC and their developments, we have to cater to the number of persons. So what right. we have is a guide to developers, and in that it will tell us what is the catchment for an existing, to have an additional school then, or a health center, etc. Right. So you could go into the guide, which is also available online, and get the standards that would allow developers, well, in this case, it would be the state, because the state would be the ones, the main ones providing schools.
Right, because that's an interesting avenue for it, because it all speaks about the additional infrastructure that is needed.
Correct.
You may need to bolster the drainage system, the road network, schooling, hospitals, maybe retail, all of those things.
Yes. So that retail aspect of it would come into, in terms of, like, if you find that the area was zoned for something else because of this increase in demand for commercial activities,
right.
people would come to Town and Country for approval on that, and then us as the policy unit would have to look at the trends to right. decide the new policies to allow for commercial activity in those areas.
Right, so to maybe do any sort of variation.
Yes, we have to do analysis.
Okay, great. Now, other examples of the spatial planning guidelines, does it cover like subdivisions for yes. properties as well?
Yes, we do have spatial planning guideline for subdivisions, and it will basically give you what are the requirements for planning permission, and it would state what is the legal aspects of it as well.
Right.
And it is also available online.
So like an individual that may have, let's say, you know, I purchase a big estate, I win the lotto, some kind of crazy thing, and I purchase, you know, a large property remotely, and I want to create a residential area.
Yeah.
So I would need probably information on subdivision for that, for individual plots or lots, as the case may be, driveways, all of those things.
You have to get those, you have to come to us, and we will tell you if it is that the area is, in fact, has been created. So
right.
we need to see, like, your deed, we need to see whatever certificate or title, then we will check the land use policy for the area to know
right.
if what you intend to build is the policy for that area.
Oh, wow. So
yeah.
let's say it's a really, really remote area. And there aren't a lot of infrastructural things in place. Like, let's say my intention is to build, you know, probably starter homes, maybe a one-bedroom, two-bedroom for young families. In a couple of years, they may probably have kids, and there may not be a school close by. That would impact on your directives for that.
Correct. And then we'll have to, well, if you have, like, a number of requests like that, then
right.
we have to examine the policy. And this is where policy reviews come in. We call them either a bigger land use policy
right.
Or microspatial policy reviews for specific areas to see how the applications, the number of applications coming in for that type of thing, and how we could adjust our policy to suit that.
Right.
So it's not a dead end for the developer. We just want everybody to know that
to
sometimes,
be on the right.
yes, it may need review.
Right. Because sometimes I've seen you know, photos online, and you know, the areas seem nice based on all the photos and that sort of thing. And then I think about what is, like, transportation to get into and out of those areas. If it's public transport, it, you know, it kind of seems behind God back, for want of a better phrase. I mean, no offense to some of the developers and so on, but I think greater emphasis, as you said, could be given on that.
And now, I can say that mm-hmm. one aspect of that people may not consider is that if it is then not this group of people in this new development not taking public transportation, then that means that they all have their own vehicle.
Right.
Right? And then sometimes you see certain areas, they now pop up, and then all of a sudden you have a big set of traffic in that area.
Yes.
All of those things is what we have to consider when we are doing policy review.
Interesting. Now, as we move along, how are land use policies updated, as you say? So you said that you would consider based on request and so on, but is there also maybe a timestamp in terms of how often we have policies that are earmarked for review, for adjustments and so on?
Okay, well, first of all, many times we look at the applications themselves, the number of them that are coming in, and also people reach out to, like, the ministers, and, you know, they could go through appeals. So, like, if the appeal panel actually grant some relief to these
right.
persons, this is how we would consider a policy review.
Okay, so based solely then on the applications that are coming in?
Well, yes, and sometimes persons come to you for advice. So yeah. If you come to the division and say, look, I'm interested in doing something like this, and then a number of other people keep coming in and saying, this is what we're interested in doing, then it signals to us that something is happening in that area.
Right. Okay. So you mentioned, like, for instance, the traffic situation that could come about. Have there been any areas that have been kind of pinpointed or highlighted that we may have a possible problem in the not too distant future that you guys may be working on?
Well, I mean, from our actual policy reviews of existing areas that is on our agenda,
right,
we might be able to look at, let's say, maybe Madras. Some of those areas, right, you know, a lot of development taking place in those areas.
Yeah, because I've seen a lot of development, all sorts, commercial, residential, taking place within Central.
Yeah.
Wide areas, and it probably has been causing, you know, some of the traffic situation that we've been seeing.
And then that traffic would lead to other things like pollution and just the environmental quality and all those things.
Right.
So it is a very much connected, planning is so connected to many aspects of life.
Right. So what about building usages and so on? In terms of building use surveys, can you give us some information about that?
So what we call at Town and Country a land and building use survey is right, where we go out and we pick up data on every single parcel of land, and we use this to feed into our policy reviews, our land use policy updates, etc., okay, etc.
How often does that survey take place also?
Well, it depends on. So, for instance, we just had one on Mousika,
right,
because there was an application for some development in that area, and it spurred the need for a land and building use survey so that we could be sure when we agreed right, to have development done in that area, we would have made sure that it wouldn't be impacting on existing development.
Right, right. Because when you mentioned going into each and every area, I just saw it as a huge, monumental, kind of impossible task to do. So
it would be
good
for the policy, the area that right, is in question for a policy review.
So it's
Mousika
localized.
Is presently in question for
okay,
a policy review.
Because I was just wondering, wow, that's so much work.
Yes.
I can't imagine how you do it.
Yes.
But, okay, interesting. So what about micro-spatial policy reviews?
So for instance, because Mousika is a bigger area, we would have done the land and building use survey.
Right.
But we can't, knowing the resources that it takes to do a land and building use survey, sometimes we do it on a smaller scale. So we would have done, we call that a microspatial policy review. So instead right, of doing a bigger land and building use survey, we might do windscreen surveys and questionnaires at a smaller scale,
right,
so that it would take less time to do the policy review. So we call that a microspatial policy review.
Right. So it's more or less a smaller focus then,
yes,
that you'll be looking
smaller
at.
Smaller area.
Okay, great. Lots of information. Of course, if any of our listeners have questions, you could send us to send those questions to us on 306-1065. We actually have a question coming out about a certain type of architecture, whether or not it is used by the planning division, an old Eastern system fast-2 architecture. I don't know if that's ever been incorporated or so within the planning systems.
Well, it's not familiar to me personally, but what I can tell you is that we work very closely with the National Heritage Trust. And
okay,
if there's an old type of architecture that someone wants to implement, I don't see that as a problem. We would just refer to National Trust and to see.
Right.
It would be nice if you preserve old things that have history. That is the purpose of the National Trust,
right,
you know. So it would then maintain that old, you know, facade. So if it is the person is wondering if they have to get rid of that, or is Town and Country coming to modernize everything, no. We actually
right,
try to preserve heritage.
Which
right,
I think is quite commendable, because
yeah,
internationally, all of these old architectural things are, you know, tourist attractions and
yes,
all those
exactly,
things as well.
And we are big on promoting local tourism.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of architecture. but anyhow, let's not get too sidetracked. Now, we're going to be focusing now on stakeholder government participation in the policy review. So what stakeholders would you usually engage, and what sort of participation is had with the review for your policies and so on?
Okay, so for instance, we reach out to Ministry of Works, ODPM, Ministry of Agriculture,
right,
Heritage as well. This is so that we can get information from them that will help inform our policies.
So Ministry of Works, you said ODPM, Ministry of Agriculture as well too, and the heritage side of things. So quite a comprehensive side of things there in terms of the governmental participation. Is there also engagement from the general public or like interest groups like maybe the manufacturers associations and that sort of thing, the building manufacturers, any sort of agencies or so groupings that would also be considered for certain policies and so on?
Well, we usually go to those NGOs, etc., when we're doing the bigger land and building use survey, right? But when we have the smaller microspatial policies, it tends to be a little more limited because of the resources that we have and the time frame as well.
Right.
Yeah.
So, of course, based on the particular type of policy,
that's right,
would be a gauge in terms of all who you would consider for,
yes,
participation and so on there. Okay, great. Now, the town and country involvement with the environmental impact assessment reviews. What's the progress or status of that?
Well, we work very closely with the EMA. They are also under the Ministry of Planning. So it's like, right, a partner, sister, brother agency. So when they have any kind of application for CEC, they include us. And we would go through the application to look for things like consistency with the land use policies. We would look to see if they are following the legislation, if there's any breaches. We would look to see if they went through the National Spatial Development Strategy. And just generally, we are like that watchguard for planning and policy.
Right. So you spoke of the CEC, that's the Certificate of Environmental Clearance.
That's right.
Right. Would you be able to tell us all what that would entail? Or?
Well, there are a list of designated activities that would constitute the need for a CEC.
Right.
That is still going to the EMA. That is not us per se.
Right, right. So they would be in charge of that
yeah,
aspect there.
We look for more like the gaps in the document that is related to the land use policy.
Right. Have you identified major gaps within the environmental side of things?
When we say identifying major gaps, it would be like on a case-by-case basis. So if, right, somebody has their CEC in, we would go through the individual documents. Mm. Sometimes it's quite large, but we go through, Anya and I, we go through them and we pinpoint these things and we submit it to the EMA. Similarly, other agencies, like I think they would also look at ODPM as well for input into that CEC. So EMA of itself has a kind of interagency review committee, which we are a part of. We are just one.
Right, right.
And even within the EMA, you would have those that would look for air quality. You'll have those that would look for the noise in the
document. So particular sections there.
Particular sections.
Okay, great, great. And I understand that the Town and Country Planning Division is also quite involved in climate change adaptation and mitigation.
Yes.
Now, I know that, you know, you still have people on either side of the fence on the whole climate change issue. Some people are saying, yes, they are seeing climate change. Some people are saying it's a hoax, it's all kind of madness. You know, but I think the greater part is probably on the science side of things, accepting that, hey, we are seeing climate change. I mean, probably last week with all of the flooding that we had. What would have caused it, right? I mean, seeing is believing, right?
Exactly.
So How is town and country involved with addressing or tackling issues that may be arising from climate change?
So, for instance, presently we have, but same EME, they are working with a consultant to try and come up with what they call nationally determined contributions, which, because we are a signatory to the Paris Agreement, which is we are looking at monitoring and verification systems to monitor our greenhouse gas emissions. So as a land use development agency, we would work with the EMA to ensure that our policies conform to the requirements of that monitoring system. We would also look at our draft flooding SPG as well. So these things would feed into the monitoring system that the other agency, EMA, is doing to monitor climate change and its effects. So whatever mitigation and adaptation strategies come out, an agency like us would help to inform those and create those what we call key performance indicators.
Right. Now, Trinidad and Tobago, given our characteristics of being an island state, we're surrounded by water. One of the major impacts of climate change with the melting of the polar ice caps would naturally be the rising sea levels.
Yeah.
Have there been a lot of concern or policies or applications with respect to developments around coastal areas, and how have they been affected, if at all, by some of these climate change developments?
Well, they would be most affected because then, I mean, the impact of the sea level. So, for instance, like, you know, with Cedros and Ikaka, some people are actually losing land, their houses. The stability of their houses are now compromised. So that is why town and country per se would be cautious in how we give planning permission for areas like that. We would also work with, there's an entire coastal protection unit of the Ministry of Works. So we work with them as well. And therefore our policies have to keep those things in mind.
And then again, I'm thinking any sort of construction that's needed that will require town and country approval would probably identify areas that, things that are more
prone.
Yeah, prone to that sort of damage, and then possible things that they could do to mitigate it as well.
That's right.
Okay, so what about the role of town and country with respect to urban planning? Now, I know that your focus, your studies and so on have been a lot on, your emphasis has been on urban development.
Yeah.
What's the role for all of these urban projects that we've been having?
So we try to be a facilitating agency, and in terms of modernizing the country and making sure that we are out there competing with the rest of the world, we try to encourage it. So our agency is the one that would approve these mega projects, for instance, and also we would look at the effects of this type of development on just the quality of life then.
So in terms of urban development, I just happened to be walking through Port of Spain, when was it, yesterday, day before, and I saw one of the big open spaces, and I just thought to myself, wouldn't it be interesting to have an apartment complex there? Because just for ease of convenience, you know, like myself, having to go through 2.5 hours of traffic every day to get into Port of Spain, and many persons, you know, that may have similar sort of situations, having that sort of different accommodation or housing sort of thing in the nation's capital, has there been some sort of interest in that? Maybe from... I know the HDC side of things, or the government.
Definitely HDC. Mm-hmm. And we as a division, we have started to review the density for areas like Port of Spain and in our policies. And then we would accommodate the bringing back of residents into Port of Spain, because, you know, everybody say Port of Spain is a dying city, but it is not. It is not. So we had looked at our policies for Port of Spain, and we reviewed in a what we call a national hierarchy of standards, the settlement of hierarchy for Port of Spain.
Okay, because I know on the outskirts you have like St. James, you have Woodbrook, you have Belmont, you have a lot of areas, but like in the city center,
everything, it's heavily commercialized. People are coming out of St. James and choosing Canopia and choosing Central. I mean, I personally love Central, but there is a need for housing within the city, and if you have to have a vibrant city, you have to have people living there.
Definitely.
So between 8 to 4, when people come to work, the city is buzzing, and then after 4, it's like a dead city. We can't do that to our capital.
Right.
So we try to look at the policies to accommodate things like that and work with partner agencies like the UDCOT and the HDCs and so on.
Okay, great. Is there anything in the pipeline that you might be able to give us in terms of your division or unit or so, if you were to probe a bit, in terms of some goodies or some things that have been eyeballed?
The biggest thing for our division really is the developed TT system, which you would have spoken to Ms. Ratton saying Mr. Pariag about. That is what we look forward to, because automation is the future for us right now. And to just to have the burden is having these volumes of applications, and therefore automation is supposed to be really and truly helping us to reduce that. And that is our big ticket project.
Right.
You know? So we would encourage the public to check out the system. Don't be too intimidated. You could always call us as well. We facilitate, as was said before, we facilitate.
And I believe there's also the chat system,
the chat
that's embedded on the program.
Monitored every day.
Which is pretty user-friendly. So, of course, I want to remind our listeners that you can visit the website as well, www.developtt.gov.tt, for all the information therein, and of course with your platform as well.
Yes.
Share it with our listeners once again.
It's the tcpd.gov.tt, the website.
Right.
Yeah.
And they could get all the information and contact information there as well.
And we always welcome emails if someone has a problem and they're not getting through on that avenue.
Right. Mm-hmm. And of course, the email contact is also on the website as well. So you could get all the information that you need from Ms. Donaldson and her staff, quite hardworking, to address all of your concerns and questions as well.
Yes.
So, Ms. Donaldson, I believe we are out of time for our interview today. Anything that you would like to share with our listeners before you leave with us this morning?
Just to tell the public that Town and Country is not the big bad wolf. We facilitate development and you all are free to approach us at any time for assistance.
Great. Well said. Thanks so much, Ms. Donaldson. That's Ms. Aisha Donaldson from Develop TT, of course, under the Ministry of Planning, joining us right here on Freedom 106.5 FM this morning. So thank you once again.
Thank you very much for having us.
No problem.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.